As social distancing and well-advised restrictions have finally become the norm across much of our country, Interfaith Alliance continues to offer brief but important daily Facebook Live conversations with faith activists and thought leaders called Stay Home, Stay Focused. This week, Rabbi Jack Moline spoke with Jen Smyers of the Church World Service Immigration and Refugee Program, and I'd like to share some highlights with you now.
It's likely that many of our viewers and listeners don't know what Church World Service is or its long history and origin. So could you talk about that for a minute?
Sure, of course. So Church World Service is an ecumenical partnership of 37 different Protestant, Orthodox, and Anglican communions and denominations in the United States. And we work both overseas in terms of international disaster reduction and risk assessment. We work on refugee and displacement issues, both abroad and here in the United States in terms of resettlement. We work on hunger and poverty issues. In fact, maybe some folks have been involved in the Crop Walk, which raises funds to help people who are suffering from hunger and poverty, both overseas and in the United States.
It really emerged out of a need to address the huge problem of refugee resettlement after World War II.
That's exactly right. So we would have boats that would be going over to war-torn Europe with provisions, food, clothing, medicine, for people who are impacted, and then those same boats would be returning to the United States with refugees on board who were really in need of just a way to rebuild and restart their lives. So that's really how we got started in partnership with the National Council of Churches, and now we continue to coordinate amongst those 37 denominations to do that international work as well as refugee resettlement.
And the international work includes things like climate change, food security, availability of clean water, and a focus on the plight of women and children. But your focus is on immigrants and refugees. And it may be obvious given the description of the origins of Church World Service, but why is that an important focus of CWS?
Sure. Well, refugees are by definition vulnerable people who are not only in many cases homeless and hungry, but without a country to call their own. They don't have a place to hang their hat. They are persecuted by their country of origin. They're typically continued to be persecuted where they first have fled. Many countries don't want to allow them in. And so it's a specific population that we feel called by our faith to welcome the stranger, to extend a hand to those who are persecuted, and to really make sure that we're living up to our commandments to do right by those who are oppressed and to welcome the stranger and to love our neighbor.
So there really is a faith mandate to do the work that you do. And I wonder if you could opine on the relationship that the work you do has to the First Amendment, to the freedom of conscience and the ability of faith institutions to not interfere or be interfered with by the federal government.
Sure, absolutely. Well, yes, I mean, to welcome the stranger is the most cited, you know, commandment in the Bible. We take that really seriously. And when it comes to the First Amendment, there are a lot of intersections with our work. We strongly believe that we need to have the right to care for people regardless of their immigration status. We strongly believe that we have the right as a religious organization to call upon our government to continue to welcome people who are facing persecution. It's not only in line with our biblical call, but it's in line with U.S. law and international law. And that's really critical. When it comes to ways that we feel those rights have been infringed upon, actually, we get to the very nature of the refugee crisis right now. We are admitting the lowest level of refugees to the United States ever in the history of the resettlement program during the worst displacement crisis the world has ever faced. And we're continuing to see people who are undocumented and people of various immigration statuses be targeted by our own government. And when it comes to our desire to stand in solidarity with with immigrants and refugees. We need to do that. We need to feel safe to do that as religious organizations, regardless of what someone's status is. And that's what we continue to do in standing in solidarity. We do that through the sanctuary movement and in other mechanisms as well.
And I want to emphasize, because I think the people who watch and listen to these segments may be thinking, because of other segments that we've done, well, Interfaith Alliance has advocated for the rule of law when religious institutions want to go their own way in this national pandemic, claiming that their faith supersedes the Constitution. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but Church World Service not only relies on faith, they are insistent that what you are doing is the very best of what the Constitution and the broader law of the United States demands of us.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Refugee Act of 1980 was passed into law with broad bipartisan support. Refugee resettlement and the humane treatment of asylum seekers and immigrants is really enshrined in both U.S. law and in international law. So what we're really calling on is, you know, for the United States to uphold its international obligations, for the United States to uphold current U.S. law, and as people of faith, for us to lean into our biblical calling, as well as the statute both internationally and domestically allow us to do in terms of treating every human being with dignity.
So you were yourself about to embark on a new initiative from Church World Service before all of this pandemic stuff descended on us. I'd love for you to tell people about this because it's so important and so exciting.
Sure. Thanks so much, Jack. And thanks for the opportunity to talk with folks today. So we're really seeing a confluence of anti-immigrant sentiment, anti-Muslim sentiment, xenophobia, anti-immigrant and anti-refugee sentiment all happening at once in terms of policies and rhetoric. And we're also seeing in terms of this current pandemic, scapegoating of immigrants and anti-immigrant sentiment and policies really being allowed to pervade society, right? And being excused as, you know, part of the response to a global pandemic, which we know it's not, right? We could spend a whole session just talking about that. But that really makes this initiative even more important. So Church World Service has started a separate organization called Voice for Refuge Action Fund. And it's a 501c4 organization. So Church World Service is a 501c3 organization. And so that means that we have certain limitations in terms of how much we can lobby Congress. It means that we can't, for instance, take a position in terms of a candidate who's running for office. And, you know, right now with the challenges that we're facing with the targeting of the refugee and immigrant population by members who are public officials, by the president, by Congress, we know that we need to exercise a different muscle. We know that we need to demonstrate and force harder accountability of our public officials. And that's where the vision for Voice for Refuge really started. We want to be able to lift up the voices of refugees who are running for public office and make sure that people can support them and hear about their stories. We want to make sure that pro-refugee public officials and pro-refugee candidates have someone on their side who can help lift up their voices and their policy efforts. And we want to make sure that public officials who are anti-refugee have consequences for that, that they know that you can't just throw refugees under the bus, so to speak, and that that's not a politically feasible way to win. There are political consequences to that. And so that's one of the reasons that Voice for Refuge was formed, so that we can continue to lobby, but in a way that's less restricted, and that we can be able to endorse candidates, refugees themselves, and pro-refugee candidates who are running for public office. So we're excited. We have a launch planned that now will be digital in June, and folks can learn more at voiceforrefuge.org. But we're very excited and continuing to move forward with this effort, even during this challenging time, because it really has focused our efforts in terms of how this is so important.
Does our frustration at being quarantined begin to approximate what people who have been detained and put in detention, particularly at our southern border, are experiencing?
Thanks for this question, Jack. I mean, it really doesn't. I have seen many articles likening, quarantine restrictions to incarceration or to detention or to what, you know, refugees face in refugee camps. And I understand where those comparisons come from, but they really pale in comparison to what someone is facing whose life and freedom is restricted. You know, here I am in quarantine, but free to move around my home, free to hug my son, to hold hands with my husband, to, you know, put a takeout order in, to send my husband to get groceries. I can call whoever I want. I can really do whatever I want in the confines of my home and take a walk down the street. That is absolutely leaps and bounds different than someone who is in immigration detention, who literally is walking around in a very small area, perhaps with a toilet in their area, and that's it, perhaps without a bed to lie on. They're not allowed to see their family. They're not allowed to make frequent phone calls. They're barely allowed visitors or access to legal representation. They're not free to walk around. They might have an hour of activity outside. I mean, these are people, we've seen pictures, right, of children crowded with nothing but, you know, those metallic blankets to keep them warm. I mean, these are human rights violations that are happening in this country to migrants who are detained. And what they are facing is a travesty and really can't be compared to even, you know, the worst desperation or anxiety that we're feeling during our quarantine here.
We are facing unique challenges with this administration, including the most recent declaration by the president that he's halting a good deal of the limited immigration that exists under his administration for the next 60 days. What's behind this antagonism to people who come from other places, and how should we be responding to it?
Sure. Well, I think it's important to note that while it is mounted under the guise of public health or the economy, this immigration restriction will do absolutely nothing to keep us safe from a virus that's already here, and it will do absolutely nothing to promote the U.S. economy or anything that it's claiming to do. This is a continuation of anti-immigrant policies from this administration that started on day one. Numerous Muslim bans, refugee bans, asylum bans, numerous ways of making it harder for immigrants to come to the United States legally, numerous ways of making life miserable for immigrants who are already here in the United States. This executive order is anti-family, first and foremost, because it will cut family-based immigration to the United States by more than 93%.
Wow.
Impossible for a U.S. citizen to sponsor their sibling, their parent, their adult or married child. It will make it impossible for someone who has a green card to sponsor their spouse or their minor child. I mean, these are gut-wrenching impacts on people's ability to be with their loved ones. And in the midst of a health crisis in which people need to be near their loved ones more than ever. So this, it's incredibly unfortunate. And I think that it just goes back to this administration's campaign promises and what they've done since day one, but aggravating that and doing it during this crisis, I think is really exceptionally cruel.
So people are at home and they're hearing your message. What can they do to stay inspired and engaged on this issue, Jen?
Sure. So I would encourage folks to find an immigrant rights organization near you. There are a variety of groups, Casa de Maryland, which is near me, but every single state has a local immigrant rights group. If you're not already connected with them, connect with them. If you're not already connected with a refugee resettlement agency like Church World Service or the other eight agencies, connect with them. These are the populations that are really cut out of, you know, the stimulus package and the other coronavirus relief packages that have been passed. So if you're thinking about how you can donate or how you can volunteer or how you can take to social media and utilize your voice to lift up solidarity with these populations, those local avenues are one way to do that. Folks can also sign up for our advocacy alerts at cwsglobal.org. They can check out Voice for Refuge, I mentioned, is voiceforrefuge.org, and continue to find ways to have conversations, even difficult conversations, with folks who might feel differently about some of these issues, because the way that we change hearts and minds is in many ways just by opening our own hearts and our own mouths.
Jen Smyers, thank you so much.
The Interfaith Alliance Facebook Live series, Stay Home, Stay Focused, continues weekdays at 12:15 Eastern Time. Sign up for notifications and see the list of upcoming guests at facebook.com/Interfaith Alliance. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, thank you, thank you, thank you. Your generous support of this program is vital to keeping us on the air. If you think there's value in what you've heard here, and you think it's important that others hear it as well, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. And do you know someone who you think might benefit from hearing what you're hearing? Please commit to sharing State of Belief with just one person this week. With so many of us struggling with isolation, it can be very helpful to hear encouraging words and civil conversations around the issues we all care about the most. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Once again, we will look deep into a world experiencing strange times. I know we're being told that we're beginning to see light ahead. But friends, I can't get out of my mind that in a span of just a few weeks, our nation has lost, as I speak right now, our nation has lost almost 47,000 lives. Look around you, please. There is a lot of hurt. Mourning is plentiful. Scores of people can be helped immensely by a comforting word or an act of empathy. Until we get together again, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.